We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We have the first rookie touchdown. We have the first rookie quarterback touchdown pass of the season. It's not Kenny Pickett. It's not anybody that we expected. It was Bailey Zappe with the first touchdown pass. We break down everything that happened this week in week four on a sloppy week four here on the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Football Podcast, brought to you by our good friends at No House Advantage. Appreciate their sponsorship. We'll tell a little bit more about what they have to offer later on the show. But it was a sloppy week four, sloppy opening here by me and the opening of the podcast too. Nick, what's going on? How are you?
I'm good, man. Nice of you to kind of, you know, make an effort to reflect the week that was in the opening of the podcast. That's called dedication. But
yes,
it was a very sloppy week around the NFL. My Green Bay Packers, who I guess are partially my team, I should say my NFC team, extremely sloppy in their ultimate win over a third string quarterback. You mentioned Zappe in the intro. That was sloppy. We saw plenty of sloppiness in Philly. It was a wet environment. It prompted me at one point to look up what the record is for most lost fumbles in a game. Turns out Trevor Lawrence fell just short. I think Kurt Warner appears to hold the record with 5 lost fumbles. Lawrence lost 4, also threw a bad pick. So in some ways, felt like a step back for the Jags. A very winnable game, a 1-score game, you know, one where they had a chance at the end, you know, before Lawrence's 4th fumble of the day. But the defense at least looks to be for real for the Jags, but we can get into that later. We don't need to go full on Jags corner right away.
Well, let's rip that Band-Aid off and, you know, do it. So the weather is a big issue in this game. It was a big issue in Baltimore. Sideways rain is usually a bad condition to play in there. The Eagles, I mean, they managed to handle a little bit better, but again, I mean, they didn't ask a whole lot of Jalen Hurts this game, but he did get his rushing touchdown. But on the Jaguars side, they had a 14-0 lead in this game.
Right.
I mean, they jumped on, you know, it was like, oh, Jags are for real. We're announcing our presence with authority. And then the turnover fest started happening after that.
Yeah. Well, they get the pick 6 on the Eagles' first possession of the game. That was huge. And then put together a really nice drive that looked a lot like the Jags offense these last couple games, against the Chargers and against the Colts. And after that, I mean, like you said, it was just turnover after turnover after turnover. And, you know, the weather was certainly part of it. One of them, you know, Trevor Lawrence is rolling out and just straight up drops the ball. Like, nobody was really even near him. That one, obviously the ball was wet. You know, you chalk it up to the weather. But those other ones, I mean, yeah, the ball being wet probably causes it to slip out of your hand a little bit more easily. But he's got to do a better job, you know, protecting the ball in the pocket. You know, that was just kind of one of those classic situations where pocket's starting to collapse. You know, Lawrence isn't really quite aware of it. He just, all it takes is one little swat. And it's easy for us to say. I mean, I have long maintained that if I played in the NFL or even college football, I would fumble the ball every single time I carried it. So I'm not going to sit here and say that I would have better ball security than Trevor Lawrence, but you know, that's just something that comes with being a veteran in the NFL. You know, good quarterbacks, regardless of the weather, you're not putting the ball on the ground 4 times. And those were just ultra, ultra costly for a Jags team that I thought for the most part, the defense showed up. You know, the defense was put in really bad spots all day. And, you know, still, I thought, you know, it gave the team an opportunity at the end to at least go down and try to tie this thing up. And like I said, you know, that's when Lawrence put the ball on the ground for the fourth time. But I came out of this game still feeling relatively encouraged, especially about that defense. And, you know, the Eagles are a very good team. They were at home. I think they're better prepared to handle this type of weather. But, you know, you still got to look at this on the other side and say, man, the Philadelphia Eagles at this point, I wouldn't say they're clearly the best team in the league. I think there's still a lot of love for the Bills. Certainly the Chiefs made a statement last night. But in terms of the NFC, man, I mean, the Eagles are set up pretty nicely here. Even just looking at that upcoming schedule, I mean, Cardinals, Cowboys, Steelers, Texans, Commanders, and the Colts coming up. I mean, they should be, you know, pretty handily favored in all those games.
Yeah, Cowboys game. I mean, Cowboys have a legit defense. Yeah. You know, that's the one thing. We used to think of Cowboys as this ticket to the carnival, this show. You're going to get these high-scoring games every week. No, they're a defense and running game team now. Mm-hmm. So we'll see about that one there. But, yeah, and that's obviously going to be huge in the division, too. That'll be a massive game. Travis Etienne had about as much playing time as James Robinson in this game. About same number of carries. Each had 8 carries. You know, it's hard to take away a lot from this here because the game flow, because, you know, they had the lead at first. Like, okay, yeah, we're going to have this measured game and all that. Yeah. But then the conditions kicked in. Neither caught a pass. So it was a frustrating day if you had either of the two Jaguars running backs. Frustrating day altogether. I mean, if you had any of the Jaguars skill position players. When Jamal Agnew's getting both scores, I mean, and yes, they schemed for this, by the way, a little bit. Because Zay Jones was absent, they had Agnew in the slot a lot, which pushed Kirk to the outside, which hurt Kirk, too.
Yep, exactly. Like you said, Zay Jones, kind of a big deal, missing him this week for the Jags. He's been really, really good, kind of emerging over Marvin Jones as that number two receiver. And, you know, Agnew's had big plays in the past. You know, he's a special teamer, but it was really explosive for his size. You know, he wears a weird jersey number. I think he's like, 39 or something like that. So he doesn't look like he'd be fast, but he is. And like you said, he accounted for both touchdowns in this game, despite essentially serving as the wide receiver four. I mean, he only played 18 snaps, but he ran 15 routes on those 18 snaps and was targeted 6 times. So a really nice target share to total snap ratio for Agnew. Probably not going to be sustainable. I mean, he's one of those guys that you talk about if you're just looking at the box score or you're just sorting by, you know, fantasy points last week, probably going to see some people rush out to the waiver wire to add Agnew. But you know, he's a nice little supplemental kind of gadgety piece for this offense. Typically, though, you know, not going to be somebody you can depend on for this kind of production. And you mentioned James Robinson, you know, tough game for him. But I mean, the Jags were almost like they were in Carolina Panthers mode in terms of how many plays they ran in this game. I mean, they only ran 46 plays. And, you know, playing from behind for a lot of the second half, they got away from the running game and they just couldn't put drives together. You know, whether it was turning the ball over or not being able to convert on third downs, we just didn't see James Robinson have the same level of kind of cumulative opportunity that he's had over the first 3 weeks of the season where the Jags offense was operating a lot more efficiently. So to me, no real reason to panic for James Robinson. Just a weird game where, you know, you come out of it, Philly wins by 8. Eagles ran 31 more plays than the Jags.
Yeah, when you have 5 turnovers, that'll happen. I mean, they put the ball on the ground. Robinson put the ball on the ground one other time. Kirk at least recovered that one. But, yeah, it's hard to run a lot of plays when that's the case. So, it really does that. 4 penalties, too. I mean, that's not too bad, I guess. But they had the ball for 20 minutes and 9 seconds in this game. Hard to sustain any sort of offense with that. So, they get Houston next week. Home game against Houston. Mm-hmm. I mean – I think they're going to be a survivor candidate this week. I think that they're going to be, you know, this is the, hey, at least I can pick Jacksonville this week, get it done and over with, which might be a mistake, by the way. But, you know, targeting Houston and your fantasy players. I mean, Kirk, I think Robinson's a great start next week, great DFS play. We knew this was a tough matchup, and the weather enhanced that, made it a tougher matchup too. All these are things, I mean, that we knew about there. On the Philly side of things, Jalen Hurts, they didn't ask a whole lot of him through the early pick 6, but threw for 204 yards. Again, the second quarter is this crazy quarter for the Eagles. They didn't do a whole lot other than the second quarter. Miles Sanders went off in this one here. 27 for 134, 2 touchdowns. He's getting goal line work now, Nick. That whole, hey, Miles Sanders didn't score a touchdown last year. Well, he's got 3 now. He is 3rd in the NFL in rushing yards with 356 rushing yards now. Mm-hmm.
I feel like you and I were all over this, you know, the touchdown progression for Miles Sanders. He had one on one of his first carries of the year in week 1, and it's been off and running since then. And yeah, you love to see the split in this game. They ran Jalen Hurts a ton as well. I mean, this game was just unbelievably sloppy. I mean, multiple, you know, kind of fumbled snaps, broken plays. Like, I think both teams in the second half, and Philadelphia was obviously more successful at this, were just kind of in, like, preservation mode. Like, don't do something stupid. You know, don't throw a pick six like we did earlier. Right. And I thought we saw a very conservative game plan from Philly, and it paid off. You know, when the other team is turning it over every time it touches the ball, all you have to do is essentially make sure you don't lose the game. And so we saw a very, you know, run-heavy approach, 50 carries total in this game for the Philadelphia Eagles. They rack up more than 200 yards of rushing. And, of course, Miles Sanders, a big part of that. Did still see Kenneth Gainwell, though, find his way into the end zone in this one.
Yep, right at the end of the first half there. Passing-wise, A.J. Brown still got his. Despite the lack of passing volume in this game, he went 5 for 95. Devontae Smith, though, huge game last week. You had a chance. You had a really very narrow sell high window. I actually traded him for Jeff Wilson in one league. I also had three other receivers ahead of him. So it was, and I needed a running back. So it was kind of a no brainer for me. But you know, I think you know, this is just, I think this is almost a write off sort of game for them on the passing game. Even on the Jacksonville side of things, I think it was a bit of a write off game. I'm not too worried about him, actually. I'm not too worried about Kirk. I'm not too worried about Lawrence. I think this is just one of those weird games and you move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought that for a lot of the day, the Jags seemed like the better team. I think if you say, hey, your quarterback's going to turn it over five times, you know, two of those fumbles are going to be extremely costly as far as field position.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that interception is going to happen inside the Philly 10-yard line. You would say, okay, they probably lose this game by three touchdowns. So I think just to be in that position, despite all the turnovers, I mean, it was in some ways reminiscent of your Bengals in week one against Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think to not get blown out on the road in that scenario, I think does say a lot. So you can probably tell by my tone, I feel relatively optimistic. You know, I think they acquitted themselves well. I think the defense is still really, really good, you know, really, really aggressive. And that's what you want to see. But of course, you know, to jump out to that 14-0 lead and then, you know, end up squandering it, it's a little disappointing. Did feel like Trevor Lawrence took a pretty big step back this week. But, you know, hopefully we can just, you know, move past this one and chalk it up to the weather.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the right approach. Mm-hmm. All right, the early London game. This had all the feel of typical Vikings. Favored, Saints are playing second and third string players at their offensive skill positions all over the place. They have critical injuries in the game. And Kirk Cousins throws a killer pick. Then they settle for all these field goals. But they managed to pull it out. Justin Jefferson got well, despite having to face Marshawn Lattimore. He went nuts. This is why you never bench your studs. Jefferson 10 for 147, plus the rushing touchdown was a nice little bonus there. You walked away from this one feeling pretty good about that. Thielen was pretty good in this game as well. I mean, Cousins, though, I don't trust him. I still don't trust him. The pick was really bad.
Yeah.
And he made a couple other bad throws. So they had a couple bad drops too. I mean, they left so many points on the field in this one.
Yeah. That's been the story of the year, I think, for Minnesota. You know, not quite as disastrous of a performance as week two against Philly, but you know, this offense, I think week one against Green Bay, it felt like they had maybe turned a page. You know, it felt a lot less restricted than it had been under Mike Zimmer. But yeah, now it just feels like, you know, they're sitting here at 3-1, they should be happy about it, but it feels like they could have two more touchdowns per game with how this offense is operated. And, you know, good to see Jefferson back on track for sure. And, you know, that rushing touchdown was really well schemed. You know, basically walked in. It almost looked like I like watching it live. I thought they like blew the play dead. It was so open. So that was a nice supplement to his overall fantasy value. And like you said, Adam Thielen these last couple of weeks, you know, at least been like a low end starter in some leagues. I have him in one league where I've kind of been depending on that. You feel okay about it. You know, not a lot else though, fantasy wise here. Dalvin Cook was relatively limited in this game. Did get 20 carries for 76 yards. But we saw Alexander Mattison, you know, of course, working his way into the mix as well. I mean, Mattison outsnapped Dalvin Cook 13-1 on third downs. Although we did see Dalvin Cook operate as a short yardage back. So it was kind of a weird situation where we thought he might be limited. He kind of was, but at the same time, you know, you got to be happy with 20 carries for a guy who dislocated his shoulder a week ago.
Yeah, exactly. I find it interesting. They're playing next week. You know, usually after the London game, okay, you get the week off, but some team, it started last year, teams could opt not to do that. So Minnesota's got a home game against the Bears coming up this week. So they go roll right back. So we'll see about Cook's status, you know, making sure that that shoulder's okay. Looks like it's all right. By the way, Mark Sanchez loved it when they threw to like the non-people. Like Johnny Munt dropped that ball. That was a hideous drop. Goodness. Oh, that was a touchdown. Walk-in touchdown. CJ Ham, like, yes, we need more CJ Ham out patterns. Yep. No, we don't. We really don't. More Jefferson. And this, at this point, Jefferson had like three catches. We were like, and they they actually kind of started using Jefferson after that. After this, on the Saints side, I mean, hard to conclude a whole lot. Chris Olave is a stud. Got his first touchdown. They had no Michael Thomas. They had no Alvin Kamara. They had no Jameis Winston. They may not have Winston for a while, is my guess. Ingram got hurt for a while in this game. Murray took over. Murray actually out-touched Ingram. But I kind of think that's fool's gold. I don't think that's something that's repeatable. I saw a lot of Twitter conversations about Alvin Kamara being scratched. Well, what do you do with the early game? You wake up and you decide whether, you know, I'm on the West Coast. Yeah. I still got up in time for that. And the thing is, you knew. He had three limited practices. He had previously missed a game with this injury. They added a player from the practice squad at his position. You should have been on notice. And if you don't want to wake up early, because shame on you. But you should be able to swap in game. So don't pressure commissioner for that one.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I mean, it's brutal. It is what it is with these London games. I mean, this is kind of the worst case scenario in a lot of ways. You know, having a key player like Kamara be a true game time call for a game that, you know, for you kicks off at 6:30 a.m. So it's not easy, that's for sure. But you know, as Woody Harrelson once said in True Detective, a man's game charges a man's price. You know, you want to play high stakes fantasy football, you might have to wake up, set the alarm, you know, get him out of your lineup and go back to bed.
Yeah, I know with your partying lifestyle, Nick, that it might be a little challenging. You know, you're in Madison. You know, rumor has it they have beer there. But
they still do. I can't confirm. Yeah, first time back in a while. They still have plenty of beer in Madison. But yeah, it was great to be on hand, you know, to witness the official demise of Wisconsin football.
Yeah, it's weird. It's really weird because they've been so solid for such a long time. And then even like as recently as the last couple of years, I mean, they've been strong. Maybe a little bit of a downfall last couple of years. I mean, the quarterback play has been a little shaky lately, but nonetheless. Sidebar aside, you know, I'd love to have Wisconsin's last 20 years. Let's just put it that way. But we'll see what
happens. Most programs would at the end of the day. We got to keep it in context.
Got to figure out who you are. But sometimes it can get worse. It can absolutely get worse. Ask Nebraska. Yeah. Don't ask Nebraska. It might be too soon for them. But all right. Otherwise, on the Saints, I think we just got to watch for health. I mean, Jarvis Landry got two targets in this game, plus the 2-point conversion where he was as open as a play can be. Another one of those plays where I was like, is this, did they blow it dead because he's so open? But not a whole lot else there. I'm very happy that I have a lot of Olave in a lot of places. Knock on wood, stay healthy, please.
That's really all I have too. I mean, Saints, it's just, everything kind of depends. Like if Michael Thomas misses more time, then we maybe need to kind of dive deeper on what that breakdown looks like at the receiver position. I will say, I thought Andy Dalton played pretty well. Let's say Jameis misses another game or two and Dalton looks like this, not out of the question that we could have a mini quarterback controversy. It kind of depends how much of Jameis's struggles we're willing to chalk up to the injuries, because he's been outright bad these last couple of weeks. And if he comes back, you know, and his back is healed, maybe that goes a long way towards solving some of those issues. But I thought Andy Dalton, he probably gave the Saints their best quarterback performance of the season in this game.
Yeah. I really do. I do wonder what they're going to do there. I mean, it's four fractures in his back.
Yeah.
Saints, by the way, they're 1-3 now. And they should have lost in week one. Our friend Joe Dolan had a pretty good tweet about that. Like, they're in bad shape. They're 1-3 and, you know, they don't have a first round pick next year. So they're going to be in a tough spot here.
They're in rough shape. They also had I read this morning, they had the two oldest ball carriers in the entire league this season operating in this game, in Mark Ingram and Latavius Murray. So not exactly a youth movement here behind Kamara.
Yeah, well, you know, Tony Jones wasn't good enough. They had to healthy scratch him despite all that. But, I don't know. They kind of like they wanted to go with this familiar names and faces, I guess. But tough spot. All right. Before we move on, all of our podcasts are on the Blue Wire Network. Here is a couple of ads from them.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thank you for your indulgence. Appreciate the Blue Wire Network for hosting us. Let's move on to Browns-Falcons. Yay, I can't wait for the rewatch on this one. Running play, more running plays. Although Jacoby Brissett actually threw the ball 35 times. Maybe they should have run the ball a little bit more if you're Cleveland. Whereas Atlanta, I mean, they ran the ball 35 times. They only allowed Marcus Mariota to throw 19 times. They only completed seven of them, and they still won. Seven complete passes, no touchdown passes, and they won 23-20.
Yeah, Mariota spent all week grinding Justin Fields tape. And he's like, all right, this is how I need to operate in this game. 7 of 19 for 139. I mean, yikes. It felt like Atlanta was moving the ball better in this game. Yeah, obviously, they ripped off a few long plays on the ground. Tyler Algier had one in the second half. And you know, Cleveland played okay. It felt in some ways like a redux of the end of that Jets game. I think that was week two where you know they had a chance at the end, down three. All they need to do, get into field goal range. You got a good kicker now who could make a 50-plus yarder. And you put the ball in the hands of Jacoby Brissett. You ask him to make a play. He's flushed out of the pocket, throws another terrible interception. For the most part, he was okay in this game. You know, had a nice rushing touchdown, kind of looked like a kind of a dilapidated like Michael Vick version of that, like breaking through defenders, stumbling his way into the red zone. But you know, he goes 21 of 35 for 234. Other than the pick, I thought he was solid. David Njoku looking very good in this game again. An efficient 5 catches on 7 targets for 73. Didn't see almost anything out of Amari Cooper though. He was a guy who
4 targets.
I think after looking really good in bad conditions against a good Pittsburgh defense last week, just completely shut down in this game by AJ Terrell. So hats off to that Atlanta defense. And, you know, for the most part, I think Cleveland did what it wanted to do. You know, Nick Chubb, 19 for 118, Kareem Hunt, 10 for 49. We see another, you know, big rushing game for the Cleveland offense, but I actually thought it was the Browns defense that just let them down time and time again.
Couldn't stop the run.
This game. They couldn't stop the run.
Was it like 10 running plays in a row at one point in time or, you know,
at least, yeah. I mean, given that split, yeah, that definitely checks out. I mean, we should mention too, no Myles Garrett, no Dejavian Clowney. You think of those guys as I think helping more against the pass, but I mean, missing Garrett, especially that's a big deal.
It's a huge deal. But it was clearly like, we're going to run the ball. We're not even going to use Cordarrelle Patterson. He's not a workhorse. That was a takeaway there is that we love him. He was in the game to help close it out. He's a difference maker, but they got to preserve him. He barely practiced this week. So Tyler Algier went 10 for 84, had that nice long run. Caleb Huntley. Who's Caleb Huntley? 10 for 56, third string running back. Avery Williams even had a big carry there for 21 yards. I mean, they're committed to the running the ball. They're trying to like have as least amount of exposure to Mariota as possible. It's basically the way I read it. Mariota's not even running anymore. So even as a super flex quarterback, you can't really use him unless you're like utterly desperate.
Yeah, this is a weird game for Atlanta. I mean, credit to them for finding a way to win, but they kind of did it in some different ways than we've seen through these first few weeks of the season. But they are officially in the frisky zone for me. I mean, 2-2, they're a team that I think could beat just about anybody on any given week. Just finding ways to kind of hang around in all these games. Mm-hmm. And they gave the Rams a run for their money. They probably should have beat the Saints in week one. I mean, there's a world in which they're 3-1 right now, kind of lurking as, I mean, as of right now in that division, I think they've clearly looked like the second best team. I mean, the Saints, I think, certainly have the potential to be the better team, but we have no idea what's going on with their quarterback situation. They have key injuries. They can't really move the ball. I think Tampa Bay is going to ultimately be just fine and probably win the NFC South in runaway fashion. But to me, it feels like Atlanta is you know, kind of on that same level as New Orleans.
Yeah. Well, Falcons travel to Tampa this week, so This will be a really good test, because I think that the takeaway here is Atlanta's defense is actually good, kind of good. Pass defense, at least, is. They have two good corners. And you mentioned A.J. Terrell. I mean, he's been fantastic all season long. So, yeah, maybe that's the real takeaway is that, I think they got burned in the slot in week one by Jarvis Landry. I think that that's the problem is that they don't have a whole lot of depth. That's something they're developing. Now, I think the offense is still pretty bad, but, mm-hmm. I mean, 202 rushing yards. I mean, they did what they wanted in this game, and they lowered the number of possessions and, you know, ultimately stole a game from Cleveland here. Cleveland's got to be kicking themselves here. They could be 4-0.
Oh, my goodness.
Of course, so could the Bengals. That's a takeaway, too. But it was a wonderful week for my Bengals. They won, and everybody else in the division lost. They're tied for first after starting 0-2. Useful there. The Browns, I mean, they gacked away the Jets game. All-time choke there. And then this one here, they had a lead. They kicked it away.
Yeah, this one wasn't nearly as bad as the Jets loss. Right. But, I mean, it almost felt like they kind of put themselves in a hole early on. So, first drive of the game, they get all the way down inside the Atlanta 5, and they strike out. You know, they go for it on fourth down. And Jacoby Brissett threw the ball away on fourth down. I mean, you got to at least, throw the ball up for grabs. I mean, if you throw a pick, so be it. You can't throw the ball away on a fourth down. So they throw away their first possession. They hold Atlanta to a field goal after that, and then immediately fumble deep in their own territory and hand Atlanta another touchdown. So they put themselves in a 10-0 hole right away. And from then on, it just kind of felt like one of those games where you're one step forward, two steps back for Cleveland. The only other thing I have before we move on, Kyle Pitts, man.
I was just going to bring that up.
Yep. Another complete no-show. I mean, his snap count was way down in this game. In certain formations, they don't even use him anymore. I mean, he was outsnapped by somebody named Parker Hesse, 48-34. Only 34 snaps played by Kyle Pitts in a game where they had, I think, close to 60 offensive snaps.
So it raises the question. A couple of weeks ago, I was saying buy low on Kyle Pitts, trade for him. And then they tried to establish him against Seattle, and he did all right. Didn't score, obviously. But, I mean, is it because of their commitment to the run is – Hesse a better blocker, for instance? Do they just
must be.
They always talk about how Pitts really isn't a tight end. Well, is this just the wrong team? Do we need a quarterback change? If they do bring in Desmond Ridder at some point in time, is that do enough to resuscitate Pitts's value, or what are we looking for here?
I don't know. At this point, I think that's kind of what you're hoping for. Just like a change for the sake of change to see if something happens. But I mean, this team's 2-2. They are coming off of a win here. Like, I don't think we're in any danger of Marcus Mariota losing his job at this point. I think it would probably take, like, if anything, I mean, he's probably on stronger footing now than he was to coming into the year. So I don't know, man. I mean, this is really tough given the level of investment and the level of talent. Like, you don't feel good about benching Kyle Pitts. I mean, I guess you could maybe try to trade him, but you're selling at the lowest value possible. I don't know, man. And there's just not that many productive tight ends week to week where you're not going to go grab someone off of waivers and feel better about starting that guy week to week than you would Kyle Pitts. It kind of sucks to say, but I think you just have to ride it out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I really do. Arthur Smith's not soul searching. They won. He's fine. I'm perfectly content. Now, I think game flow is going to matter. They fall behind the Bucks. That'll change things a little bit there. They won't be able to grind like they were able to this week. All right, Cowboys and Commanders. The Carson Wentz devolution continues. He's gotten worse every single week. Four straight weeks where that QB rating's gone down. They got sacked 9 times the week before in Philly. you know, you kind of figured, okay, up against the Dallas pass rush, this is going to be a problem. It was a problem. But, you know, it's just diminishing returns. Two picks in this one, 42 attempts, only 170 yards. This is a Flacco level of return on investment, maybe even worse. They've really started to fall apart.
Yeah, and I think early in the season, they kind of looked like they might be in the same boat as the Lions, where it's like, okay, I mean, this defense is shaky, the quarterback is shaky, but ultimately they're going to be in these shootout games. They're piling up points. You know, they scored all those second-half touchdowns against Jacksonville, you know, scored some garbage time points in week two. Carson Wentz is like briefly a top five fantasy quarterback. And yeah, things have come crashing down these last couple of weeks. I mean, they moved the ball almost, you know, for no yards against the Eagles in week three. And then this was, I think this game played out just about how you'd expect, right? With this Cowboys pass rush against Carson Wentz coming off of a week where he took 9 sacks, only took 2 sacks in this game, but was really never comfortable. And yeah, right. I think the way that Dallas is kind of moving around guys like Micah Parsons, giving different looks. I mean, it's been really confusing for teams the last few weeks. And again, I think this played out almost exactly how you would have expected.
Right.
You know, on the fantasy side, Jahan Dotson gets in the end zone, did get hurt late in this game, sat out the final couple possessions. We're not really sure what's up with him. I mean, that would be another pretty big blow for the Commanders, but very quietly now, the Dallas Cowboys, I mean, sitting at 3-1, likely getting Dak back next week. You know, got to be pretty much best case scenario given where we thought this team would be the moment that Dak hurt his hand.
Hot take coming here. Dallas should take their time in bringing Dak back. Don't rush him back. I feel like this is almost like Russell Wilson coming back too soon last year. And they faced the Rams this week on the road. Do you want to throw him in on this? I don't know. I mean, yes, I don't want to say Cooper Rush should take over. Let's make sure this is not a anti-Dak comment. It's a make sure he's fully all the way back. If there's any sort of doubt, don't push it. Cause I mean, a player playing through a thumb injury, it could be a really bad situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think there's a clear distinction between make sure he's healthy and we have a quarterback controversy and Cooper Rush
is the
starter. I mean, yeah, this isn't going to be a like wildly ironic situation of how Dak got his job, you know, over Tony Romo back in the day. But yeah, I was watching some games with friends yesterday, and we were talking like, I mean, is Cooper Rush putting himself in a Matt Flynn-like position? Like, is there a team out there that is going to look into Cooper Rush as a potential starter next year?
And then regret it? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I think he's a perfectly competent game manager in a good situation. I don't think he's done a whole lot. I mean, second half against the Giants, he did pretty well. Second half in this game, he did okay. You know, again, there wasn't a whole lot. This wasn't an offensive explosion by the Cowboys. They didn't ask a whole lot of them. You know, he didn't turn the ball over. Yay. Good job. I mean, I think that's really it. I mean, he only threw the ball 27 times. This is another game where they didn't run a ton of plays. This was a slow paced game.
Yep. Yeah. And it's, you know, it wasn't as much of a blowout as the final score would indicate. I mean, Washington was threatening and in this game for most of the second half. And, you know, we saw a great job by Trevon Diggs who showed up again this week. And this Dallas defense, I mean, it's for real, man. You know, even going back to week one against Tampa, you know, really limiting the Buccaneers in that game and keeping them in it despite the offense not being able to do anything. And the offense hasn't been great, but we are starting to see at least the awakening of CeeDee Lamb, who, you know, this time last week, he was on that short list of really disappointing receivers, guys who, you know, are falling in your value meter every week. And at least now he's back on track. And I think with Dak coming back, you have to feel at least as good, if not better, about CeeDee's value for the rest of the year. Although some help arrived for this Dallas receiving core this week. Michael Gallup back in the mix, essentially served as a wide receiver 3. I mean, in terms of snaps, he was still well behind CeeDee Lamb, well behind Noah Brown, but nonetheless, good to see him back out there.
Right. And Noah Brown got hurt in this game too. So watch, it could be he's a solid you know, wide receiver 2 for their team, if not for our purposes. But CeeDee Lamb is kind of like DK Metcalf last year. I keep going back to the Seattle comparison. Yeah. In week one, 2 for 29, 11 targets, 7 for 75, 8 for 87, 6 for 97 in the 3 games under Cooper Rush. This is actually his fewest number of targets. He had 8. This is the first time so far this year he hasn't had double-digit targets. You kind of like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think the moment that he dropped that pass in primetime last Monday, goodness, like what is going on? Is this going to be my life as a CeeDee Lamb owner the rest of the year? And all of a sudden you look up now and, you know, through 4 weeks, he's the wide receiver 13 in PPR leagues.
Kind of a wake-up call almost.
Yeah, yeah, it felt that way. And, you know, he rebounded, had that nice, you know, kind of diving one-handed catch in the end zone to get in there against the Giants. You know, finds the end zone again this week. And a lot of big names ahead of him, you know, when you look at the top performers at receiver. So it's maybe going to be hard for him, you know, to find himself near the top five when it comes down to it. But ultimately, there's so much talent at receiver right now that, you know, if CeeDee Lamb with a backup quarterback is still in the top 15 at this point, you got to feel pretty good about it.
Yeah, for sure. Commanders get a home game against the Titans this week. Titans, you can move the ball against them. We'll get to their game against the Colts. But I think this is – I wouldn't say get well game for Carson Wentz, but get slightly better game for him. And we'll see what happens with Dotson at hamstring injury, obviously.
It should be. It should be on paper. We'll see. I mean, this is it's a potential get right game for him. It's also if you lose this one at home by two scores to the Titans, it's a potential disaster as far as where the season is heading type of game for the Commanders.
Yeah. It could be fire the head coach, change the quarterback sort of game too. Yep. It's entirely possible. Four Division I head coaches have been fired already this year. So could happen in the NFL sooner too. We're getting closer to the bye weeks. It's time for teams to make some changes here and there. Yeah. All right. This podcast is sponsored by our friends at No House Advantage. No House Advantage is changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform available today. Play in pick 'em contests versus other people for the shot at winning big cash prizes. Download the app, choose a contest, select your player props, earn points for correct picks, and climb the leaderboard for your shot hundreds of thousands of dollars every single week. You can also test your skills versus the house and 20 times your entry if you hit all of your picks. Bet on up to 5 player prop over-unders or individual player matchups across every major sports league, including the NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, MMA, and NASCAR. Sign up now with promo code NHAWIRE. That's NHAWIRE at nohouseadvantage.com or download the app and on the app stores to get a first deposit match up to $25. Make sure to check out No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined, because it's not just how you play, but also where you play. You won't want to miss out on this. All right. Thanks to No House Advantage for their sponsorship of our podcast during the football season. We're excited to have them aboard. Let's talk about the shootout. Let's talk a little bit about the Seahawks and the Lions. This one, this is like dessert when I go and do my rewatches on NFL.com. So they're compressed games there. I'm going to hold off a little bit there. I may not watch Bears and Giants first, but I might watch that Cleveland Atlanta game before that there. Have a little like, okay, eat your vegetables sort of moment there. Cause this one, it's all dessert.
Yeah. This was a wild, wild game. And I mean, Detroit in particular, it just felt like all that needed was just to get one stop at some point in the second half of this game. And it never came, even late in the game. You know, it's 48-45. Time's running down, and they had a 3rd and 5, I think it was, for Seattle. And there goes Rashad Penny ripping off yet another long run in this game. I mean, 17 for 151 for Rashad Penny. I mean, Geno Smith goes 23 of 30 for 320 and 2 touchdowns. But, I mean, it was an equal shootout on both sides. I mean, I was looking up, like, most combined yards in a game. I mean, these teams combined for almost 1,100 yards on Sunday. 1,075 yards total. That was the most in any game since ironically, a game that Seattle was also involved in 2020 against Arizona. That one went into overtime, however. So to do this in regulation, pretty impressive. I mean, I think I come away from this feeling pretty discouraged about the Detroit defense. That's for sure.
For sure.
But I think you also have to be pretty encouraged that Detroit is able to put up 45 points, albeit on what might be the worst defense in the league, truly, in Seattle. But doing that without DeAndre Swift and doing that without Amon-Ra St. Brown, we saw, I mean,
or DJ Chark.
Yeah. No DJ Chark as well. Great game from Josh Reynolds. Fantastic game from TJ Hockenson. 8 for 179 and 2 touchdowns. Made some really difficult catches in this game. And then, of course, Jamal Williams looked fantastic as well. So, I mean, this was just a goldmine for fantasy. It felt like everybody who you're potentially starting ended up coming through.
Yeah, I downgraded Goff on my value meter this week because, you know, once he was going to be down his top two targets and Swift, I was like, okay. And Hockenson, I mean, he had that 81-yard catch where the tackling was really, really bad. But, hey, he made the moves on that there, too. And like you said, he made a lot of other tough catches. He got in the end zone twice, too. That was beautiful. So the Hawk alarm was ringing hard there. And, you know, great, great. great performance from them. And Williams got his. I thought he'd share carries a little bit more with Craig Reynolds. That wasn't the case. Reynolds only had two carries. Two good ones, by the way. But, you know, we want to expect a little bit more out of that. The Seattle side of things, I actually left Rashad Penny on my bench in one league. Big mistake. Huge mistake. I started Nick Chubb, who I was always going to start, but I also started Jeff Wilson over him, and I also started Alan Lazard over him. And, you know, Lazard was fine, but boy, did I miss out on an opportunity there.
Yeah, I think we got to start talking about the Lions as, you know, one of the probably 3 to 5 teams that you're targeting in terms of matchups each right. week at this point. I mean, I think the fact that they score the ball so well, you know, almost makes them more of a target. I mean, they get off the field, they'll score a touchdown in 3 to 4 plays, and then all of a sudden you're back on defense again. I mean, yeah. That was part of it is, you know, neither team was really sustaining these long drives. I mean, early on, we saw a couple long drives in the first half, but after that, look at the final like 8 drives of the game. It's touchdown, 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 field goal, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. Right. And then it's Seattle running out the clock. I mean, neither of these teams could get stops. I think we knew that about Seattle coming in. I think we had higher hopes for this Detroit defense, but this just might be who they are this year. You know, they're right up there near the league lead. I think they are the league leader in points scored now through 4 weeks. But they're going to be one of those teams that, you know, if they're going to win games against even competent teams, it's going to have to be scores like this. And, you know, I think if you're Detroit, you still feel okay. You know, obviously you don't want to lose this game at home, but you know, like you said, some very key absences on this offense, and you know, you lose a starting safety last week. It just feels like this is kind of that zone that Detroit is in. You know, very much capable of scoring, but not necessarily capable of stopping the other team.
That's right. And you look at Detroit this week; they face the Pats, so this is a pretty good test of the start your players against Detroit theory. I mean, I think you'll start Harris or Ramondre if you have one or the other. It's kind of like roulette on which receiver ends up getting the targets in a given week for the Pats. So I don't know if you'll start them, but, and we'll get to the Pats and which quarterback they could possibly use this week. But it'll be a big test. Seattle faces New Orleans in New Orleans. So Chris Olave, managers are pretty happy. If Kamara comes back, that'd be a pretty sweet matchup there too. So we'll see. Geno Smith, you know, Jim Coventry said, in his observations article, they let Geno cook. They didn't let Russ cook, but they let Geno cook.
Yeah, they sure did, and it paid off. I mean, he's had a couple of just like wildly efficient games this season. And again, a lot of this you have to chalk up to some incompetence on the side of the Detroit defense, allowing 48 points to this Seattle team. But no sacks for Geno Smith either. I mean, that was part of this as well. Good job by the Seattle offensive line keeping him clean. You know, DK Metcalf, we were very worried about DK through the first couple of weeks of the season. He's bounced back relatively nicely, 7 for 149 in this one. Didn't get in the end zone. That's disappointing, but still you have to love the yardage. Then even Tyler Lockett, 6 for 91. It's Noah Fant and it's Will Disley getting the touchdowns, but it was DK and it was Lockett doing a lot of the legwork.
Yeah, that's right. DK got carted off. No, he didn't get carted off. He rode the cart to the locker room because he had stomach issues. Yeah. And it was a far way away. The locker room was too far away. They wanted to get him back quickly. So don't worry about the health issues there. Lockett had some of his production when Metcalf was out. Metcalf was tearing it up. He just didn't score. But 7 for 149 on this one here. He's been pretty good all season long so far. If you drafted Metcalf, you're pretty happy with your return on investment there. All right. Talked enough about that game. A lot of Captain Obvious analysis on that game. Colts, Titans. The Colts are in a bad way right now.
Oh, boy. The Colts are in big-time trouble. And it kind of felt like the loser of this game was going to be in trouble no matter what. But, I mean, this was another really discouraging game for this Colts offense. And, you know, not only does Jonathan Taylor have yet another inefficient day on the ground, 20 for 42. I mean, that is a 2.1 yards per carry average for those of you who do math. One catch for 1 yard, not doing anything out of the backfield. I mean, this Colts offensive line, it felt like for a while was one of the stories of the league. I mean, it was just, you know, they're balling guys. You got Quentin Nelson. He's the best guard in football. There's just been no running room for Jonathan Taylor these last couple of weeks, really dating back to that Jags game a couple of weeks ago. And yet again, I mean, this was a game that it looked like Tennessee was going to run away with. And I mean, the Colts had opportunities in the second half. They scored early in the second half to make this a one touchdown game. And then after that, you know, they have a 10 play drive end on a punt. They fumble away an opportunity and then they miss a field goal late that would have at least, you know, kind of created one more opportunity there if they could get a stop. But man, I mean, it's been rough. I mean, Matt Ryan, the yardage looks good here. You know, the final line is okay. 27 of 37 for 356, but took three sacks, fumbled two more times. He's now fumbled nine times
in
the year. Well, yeah. Only lost one of them today, thankfully, but nine fumbles. I mean, he just doesn't look confident. I've said this a couple times this year, but I think I woefully misevaluated just how competent this Colts offense would be. I think we kind of misrepresented what the weapons were beyond Michael Pittman, who didn't do much in this game. I mean, if it's not for Mo Alie-Cox, who's just like a touchdown machine all of a sudden, between him and Jelani Woods, like no one else is really doing anything in this offense.
Yeah. And by the way, that's not bankable at all. I mean, Cox was barely getting any targets heading in this week. No. And Jelani Woods got one this week. Happened to go for 33 yards. Maybe they should go more than one, but no. And the thing is, Michael Pittman suffered in this one there. Matt Ryan threw for 356. If I told you Matt Ryan threw for 356 and two touchdowns and you're a Michael Pittman manager, you're like, okay, can't wait to see his stat line.
Yeah, right.
No.
Six targets only on those 37 attempts. I mean, yeah, it's kind of a nightmare line when you juxtapose what Matt Ryan did yardage wise with who ended up on the receiving end. It's like, yeah, if you started Kylan Granson, you're feeling great about his 4 for 62, or even Alec Pierce 4 for 80. But yeah, the guys who really matter and who are in fantasy lineups, not necessarily doing a lot here. Not a whole lot of takeaways for the Tennessee side. Derrick Henry got going in this game. 22 for 114, really without any long plays. He did have a couple screen passes. You know, he goes 3 for 33 through the air. But I thought it was going to be Jonathan Taylor who got going against this Tennessee rushing defense that was horrible coming into this game. They were allowing almost 6 yards per carry. And we saw the complete opposite. It was Derrick Henry who got going against the Colts. And more bad news for Indianapolis, by the way. They play on Thursday night this week. Already, Shaq Leonard has been ruled out. So not a lot of help coming for that defense.
Nope. He hasn't been able to play all year. Couple news injury items, and one in this game. Taylor just got a push that x-rays came back negative on his ankle. So he might be able to play Thursday night against the Broncos. The Broncos will be without Javonte Williams. It's now come down. Yep. He has a torn ACL. He is out for the season, obviously. Yep. We'll talk more about the Broncos coming up, though, but Mike Boone and Melvin Gore are going to be doing a timeshare on that one there. They both had I'll save it. I'll save the comment there about that. Also, Treylon Burks got hurt in this game. I actually thought he was maybe a sneaky guy to try to add in DFS super cheap and see if he could have that breakout game. He did not. He got hurt. We'll see what his status is going in. I mean, the receiving game, you look at it there. Robert Woods, 4 for 30. He did score, but the volume's not there. We're still waiting for that Austin Hooper breakout. That doesn't seem like that's happening. It's just, Tannehill 3 for 137 in this one. 137. Horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. You get the sense that if the Titans are going to hang around this season and if they're going to, challenge the Jags for that AFC South crown, it's going to be ugly.
Challenge the Jags. I like how you phrase that.
Yeah. If they can maybe mount a challenge to the Jacksonville Jaguars, they're going to be doing it in games like this where, you put up 24 points, but it's an ugly, ugly 24 points. And I really can't emphasize how true that was this week. But at least for the Titans, you're back on track, right? You start 0-2. You have that really tough loss to the Giants in week one. That's kind of an alarm bell type of loss, but bounce back with a nice win at home against the Raiders. You go on the road, you beat the Colts, and now you get the Commanders next week, a very winnable game at Washington. You could head into the bye at 3-2, and you'd have to feel okay about that. But this is one I picked the Colts. For Indianapolis.
Uh-oh. Yeah. And the Colts are only 1-2-1. I mean, honestly, they're in bad shape, but they're in the right division to be in bad shape.
Yes, that is absolutely the case. 100%. And they're not out of it by any means. They're still winless. They do have the tie against Houston, but
they beat the Chiefs. They beat the Chiefs last week.
Oh, they did beat the Chiefs. Okay, I blanked that out of my memory. I've been counting.
I know. So did the Chiefs apparently, because they're pretty good about that. But we'll get into that too. But they're in the right spot. I mean, they just blew a chance though against divisional foes. They're 0-2-1 in the division already. They've already played three divisional games. That part really sucks for them.
Yes, and not being able to bank a win against the Texans. I mean, getting the tie in that one is that's tough, because that's going to be the easiest game on your schedule, you would think. But yeah, we'll see. I mean, they're not out of it. The division winner might have 9 or 10 wins in that. Division.
Refusing the free square is always a bad play.
Yeah.
Bears Giants.
Next. Yeah.
Who's going to be the quarterback this week for the Giants? I mean, Daniel Jones was basically a decoy at the end of the game because of his ankle issue. They said he could be a normal quarterback. He just couldn't be a running quarterback. And then Tyrod Taylor got concussed. They play the London game this week. Hey, London, we love you. Here's the Giants. I mean, at least they didn't send the Bears along with them. I mean, it could have been worse, but what a horrible, horrible game this was.
I read yesterday that this is going to be the first London game where both teams are above 500. I'll have to go back and actually verify and see if that's true, but I assume it is. It seems like something that people wouldn't make up. Kind of wild. So finally, you know, London is treated to two winning teams, and one of them is like the worst 3-1 team of all time. It's going to be interesting, though. I mean, like the London thing adds another wrinkle. And we kind of saw it with the Saints this week where you don't really have a normal week in terms of injury reports and practice and treatment. Right. I mean, when you have this long flight, you got to take your entire football operation across the world. It makes it a lot more difficult to get a read on those injuries. And again, it didn't work out well for the Saints.
Yeah, let alone flying in a replacement. I mean, they at the very least, they need a third quarterback.
Right. They're not even carrying a third quarterback right now.
Right.
I think it would probably be David Sills, right? I mean, he was a quarterback at one point. I would assume he at least has, you know, some of those skills in his back pocket. But yeah, they're going to add somebody. You're not going to, you know, even if Daniel Jones starts this game, and we'll see what happens with Tyrod. He left with a concussion. He was like jogging off the field. You don't often see that. You know, it certainly didn't look like a concussion. If both of those guys are limited or out, they're for sure adding somebody. Who knows who they'll pick off the scrap heap.
I know of an independent neurologist who could check Taylor out for them if they want. Yeah, he's available.
He's got plenty of time on his hands now.
Yeah. And even before that, Daniel Jones, 8 for 13 for 71 yards. Vulture 2 rushing touchdowns, though.
Oh, man.
Hey, 6 for 68. I mean, he ran the ball effectively, in fairness.
The Bears look like they had never seen a play fake where the quarterback keeps it. I mean, they were burning them on that over and over. That's a great comment, though, by the way. It's like, yeah, Daniel Jones can play. He just can't run. It's like, okay, well, then what is he offering you?
Exactly. Exactly. What a weird game. Barkley looks great again. I wish I had more Barkley in my life. I have him in one league. I really wish I had him in more leagues. And Liss was right.
I know. We should. It kills me to say it. We should have heeded Chris Liss's advice. I mean, Barkley is the number one running back in fantasy right now in PPR. It's kind of him and Nick Chubb on their own island right now in terms of, you know, total scoring through these first couple of weeks. But yeah, I mean, he looks, I would say, like, I don't know if Barkley's going to end up as the RB1 at the end of the year, but he has been, to me, the single most impressive running back in the league, just in terms of how it looks. I mean, he's fully back.
Yeah. And dealing when you have no receivers whatsoever on the roster,
level of difficulty for him is insane.
Yeah, it is. It's really insane. So he looks fantastic. 31 carries though. I mean, I wonder if they're going to wear him out, but we'll see. I mean, he handled the workload just fine. They're not always going to have the advantage of facing a team who can't throw at all. And that's the case with the Bears. I mean, abandon all hope, ye who enter here. I mean, Justin Fields looks terrible. He's getting no help. He got sacked 6 times. He didn't throw any interceptions, at least, but they did. They fumbled 3 times. Velus Jones fumbled a punt. Tristan Ebner came in and put one on the ground. Khalil Herbert looked okay, 4 yards per carry, but you know he was facing an 8-man front. I mean, they just said, go ahead, try to throw on us. You're not going to be able to.
Yeah. I mean, it was ugly, obviously, for the Bears. It was about what most people expected. There's a great quote from Justin Fields after the game. Jason Leeser of the Chicago Sun-Times said, you know, just why isn't the passing game working? And Fields says, who said the passing game isn't working? And Leeser said, the stats. And Fields responded, well, the stats don't matter. So there you have it.
Okay, problem solved.
Yeah.
All right, moving on. Darnell Mooney actually showed signs of life. Did have that 56-yard nice play.
Game.
Yeah. 4 for 94. Cole Kmet. I was so wrong. I thought Kmet would be a breakout guy this year, and it's more like a broken guy this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, I love Kmet. I thought he was kind of in that Pat Freiermuth territory where he would kind of operate as the safety valve in a really bad passing offense, and it's worked out for Freiermuth. It has not worked out for Kmet.
Yep. Yep. He's kind of a cut for me. You know, I thought he was like the tight end equivalent of Miles Sanders. Okay, yeah, he didn't score, but the touches were there and he's effective. But nope, not the case. All right, enough about the stupid Bears. I don't want to talk about them anymore. Let's talk Jets Steelers instead. A lot of people worried here. This is a lot of source of consternation for people. We've seen like four people asking about Najee in the chat room here. Najee Harris. Now, Kenny Pickett has taken over. I've renamed him Can I Pickett. You don't like that one, but we're going to go with it anyhow because he threw three interceptions. Just look, you know, one of those was on a Hail Mary. It was a beautiful Hail Mary. It had nice trajectory. It was, you know, he got it there and Trubisky wouldn't have, but Trubisky earned his benching. You know, make no doubt about it. But Najee Harris, 18 for 74, 4 yards a carry. I mean, it's not too bad, but no targets in the passing game. This is a pretty moribund Steelers offense right now.
It sure is. And it didn't look a whole lot different with Kenny Pickett. I mean, he was willing to at least throw the ball downfield. It's interesting that he ended this game with three incompletions. All three were interceptions. And there's kind of an asterisk for all of them, right? One of them goes off the hands of a receiver. The other one was a nice deep ball to Chase Claypool. It wasn't double coverage. And it should have at least got more of a hand on it. Kind of a mistimed jump by Claypool. And really, I mean, that's why you have Chase Claypool, right? Those are the balls that you're paying him to come down with. So it's not going to go down as like a great throw by Kenny Pickett, but it was, you know, catchable, and it wasn't exactly a bad pick. So I think for a guy who has three interceptions in his first NFL game, you can kind of make an excuse for all three of them. And I think it's legitimate. So the biggest thing you could say about Pickett, though, is there was a massive shift in energy when he came in that game. I mean, the fans are chanting Kenny, like there was none of that for Mitchell Trubisky. I think just the act of making a change, I think makes me encouraged for the direction that this Steelers offense is going to go, even if ultimately in the short term, the results probably won't be all that different. It at least feels like there's going to be a different energy here because, I mean, the Trubisky thing, it got stale so quickly.
Really quickly. And I'm surprised it worked out as badly as it did, to be honest. I just thought escaping again. I mean, how many times we talk about this? Oh, he just needs to change his hearing. Well, maybe he was part of the problem. False. I don't know. And it looks like that might have been the case here. They were down 10-6 at halftime in this one here. Mm-hmm. Just earned that benching there. Another pick. Got sacked three times. It was just a stinky offense. Now they face Buffalo in Buffalo this upcoming week. So, Pickett's, and quarterbacks are having a really rough time against the Bills so far. So, even Lamar didn't go crazy against them. So, of course, that was also in the remnants of Hurricane Ian, too. So, hard to judge any conclusions from that game. But going back to Pickett, not a start this week for me, unless you're just desperate in a QB flex league. But I think in the long term, George Pickens benefits from this. He definitely benefited in the short term. Oh, yeah. Deontay Johnson, only four targets, 2 for 11 in this game. Is this he doesn't fit well with Pickett, or is this just the way the game worked out?
I think we got to give it another week or two and kind of see how this affects Deontay Johnson. But to me, it feels like it's a lateral move probably at worst, right? I mean, he was at least sustaining some value under Trubisky. But if you go back and watch a lot of the catches, I mean, it's like 100 out of 100 difficulty level. Deontay Johnson, like routine throws for other quarterbacks have to turn into like one-handed catches because they're so off target. I mean, it's really encouraging for Pickens to see him break out like this. That's for sure. And Freiermuth, sustained his value as well. 7 for 185, not panicking yet on Deontay Johnson, but we'll see. I mean, the problem is I don't think Buffalo is going to give us a great sense for what to expect going forward. I mean, that is for Pickett, presumably making his first NFL start next week on the road at the Bills. I mean, they're two touchdown dogs in that game. I don't really feel like we're going to come away from that one feeling great about anybody. So it might take 3-4 games until we have a better sample.
Yeah. Deny us the opportunity to have a Mitch Trubisky revenge game, though. I'm kind of bummed out about that. on the Jets side, hey, they actually won this game and they're 2-2 now. The narrative on Zach Wilson has to change quite a bit. I mean, the 14 points in the fourth quarter, otherwise it would have been a disaster of a game. Threw two picks, only 7 yards per attempt. QB rating was pretty low, but he orchestrated two comebacks in part because of field position by those interceptions. They kind of smashed and grabbed this game.
Yeah, they really did. And I was all week kind of banging the drum for Pittsburgh. I thought this was going to be a great spot. I'm a Zach Wilson guy at all. I thought they would be able to turn him over. They did, but they just couldn't get enough stops, allowing the Jets to get to 24 points in this game with Zach Wilson throwing two interceptions. I thought Pittsburgh's defense would be able to do a better job than that, but it was two late touchdown drives for the Jets that ultimately were able to deliver them this win. I mean, Pittsburgh was up 20-10 in this game at the end of the third quarter and allowed the Jets to get back in. And of course, the pick by Kenny Pickett did not help. That occurred you know, on the other side of the 50-yard line around the Jets 35. So, you know, that gave the Jets reasonable field position. And you got to hand it to Zach Wilson. I mean, I didn't come away from that game being blown away by anything that he did, but, you know, ultimately got to 250 and delivered them a win against a really good defense on the road.
He evaded the pass rush. He only got sacked one time.
Yeah, that's big.
And TJ Watt, at his absence, is actually, you know, the Steelers don't win without him. They just don't. Highsmith missed on a sack, on at least one sack that I think Flacco doesn't get away from. So Wilson's mobility helped him a little bit in that case. They spread the targets around. Garrett Wilson only had two catches. Corey Davis, 5 for 74. He was the beneficiary this week, but I don't think that's bankable. I think he's a guy that probably should be rostered, but he's also tough to start.
Yeah, should be rostered at this point for sure. There's weirdly been a lot of production in this Jets receiving corps. It's just been different guys every week. I mean, Tyler Conklin has been fairly bankable at this point. I mean, 3 for 52 for him in this game. I mean, the problem is it feels like one week it's Garrett Wilson, then next week it's Corey Davis. And, you know, at some point Elijah Moore is going to be a bigger factor in this offense. I think a lot of people are high on the connection that he showed, you know, at times last year with Zach Wilson. So it feels like it's going to be frustrating. I don't know if there's going to be one or two guys you could depend on every single week. I think the other thing before we move on to address with the Jets too is Breece Hall. I mean,
yeah.
two receptions for 12 yards, but 17 carries for 66. He out carries Michael Carter 17-9, excuse me, in this game. And he certainly looked like the more dynamic back. I think his meter is definitely pointing up as we continue along.
Right. And by the way, he almost fumbled that game winning touchdown too.
Yes, he did. That was very close.
Yeah, very, very close on that one there. All right, before we move on to Bills and the Ravens, quick note from Play with Swagger. There are 50 million fantasy sports players and sports bettors in the U.S., but 90% of all cash prizes are won by only 2% of players. That's because most sports gaming options were created for pros. You know, the dudes dropping loads of cash on data to find an edge over the rest of us. Not Swagger. Swagger is a daily fantasy sports site created for sports fans who simply want some skin in the game and a real shot at winning. Tired of losing because of one bad pick? With Swagger, you don't need to be perfect to win. You simply need to create a ticket of 4-10 simple player props and score points for the ones you get right. Your score determines your win, not the perfect ticket. You can be half right and be all right with Swagger. Swagger offers the most player props and biggest payouts of any DFS site, as much as 50 times your money. Plus, you can play fantasy football along with all the major U.S. pro sports, as well as international soccer, Formula One, NASCAR, fight sports, rugby, cricket, and even esports. Ready to play? Visit playwithswagger.com/rotowire to sign up, and Swagger will give you $10 free to try them out, plus match your first deposit 100% up to $100. Swagger, daily fantasy for all fankind. We were expecting big things out of Buffalo, Baltimore, but the weather intervened. Turn this game a little bit into the muck, Nick. You know, still 23-20. Nice comeback at the end by Josh Allen getting that rushing touchdown to tie the game and then the drive at the end. But I think any analysis of this game has to start with the decision, and that to go for it on a fourth down in a tie game. It ended up throwing an interception in the end zone instead. You only have the best kicker of all time in Justin Tucker. That's the thing that's kind of interesting about that there. What did you think about that decision?
You know, I didn't hate it just because, you know, I think you kind of had the sense at that point that Buffalo had unlocked something offensively and they were going to go down and at least get a field goal try. Although with the elements, you know, a 35-yard field goal isn't as much of a guarantee in that type of game as it normally would be. So
right. In
some ways you want to take the points, you know, you certainly would prefer to have the lead in that situation, but it's a big deal to have a touchdown on the board relative to a field goal. So I didn't hate it. The one thing though, with throwing the pick in that situation is especially key because, you know, it's one thing if you get stuffed with a run play or you throw incomplete, Buffalo's taking over at the 2-yard line, you know, turning that into an interception, that was a huge swing for field position, right? Not having to operate with your back to the goal line and getting the ball out at the 25-yard line. That to me was really, really big. And that was a big mistake by Lamar Jackson, allowing Jordan Poyer to pick off that pass. But I like the play. I mean, it was a really nice identification by Poyer, who came kind of out of nowhere, came all the way across the field to intercept that throw. But, you know, man, just it feels like that the Ravens, sometimes the aggression pays off, other times it doesn't. I mean, it felt like everybody was on board with this decision. Like, I do love the general concept of, you know, Jim Harbaugh essentially leaving the decision oftentimes in the hands of his quarterback and saying, look, do you want to go for this? You feel good about it? Let's do it. Because
of course, quarterback's always going to say yes, though.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It goes both ways, though. I don't know. Like, if the Ravens score there, we're probably praising them for making this brilliant decision. And obviously they don't, and it goes the other way. But yeah, like you said, really weird game. It's a slow start for the Bills. Allen throws a pick almost immediately. Yeah. Buffalo's not able to get really much of anything going in the first half, but it was pretty much single-handedly Josh Allen keeping them in this game. And then finding ways to win. I mean, they did benefit from a fairly questionable late hit call on Josh Allen during the final drive. That was a pretty big bailout. I think they had just taken a penalty on the previous drive. So they were facing like a long down and distance in the rain against that Buffalo or against that Baltimore defense. And in a lot of ways, it felt like that was really the biggest differential.
Yeah. I felt like we were deprived a game that we really should have seen but for the weather. I mean, both sides were really sloppy. Both averaged under 6 yards per passing attempt in this one.
Yep.
I wanted to see a little bit more out of this, but a couple other things on this one here. Lamar, the Bills really gave him a miserable day all around. I mean, 20 for 29, but only 5 yards per attempt. Only 144 passing yards. He still ran well, 73 rushing yards. You know, so he salvaged your fantasy day. J.K. Dobbins got a goal line touchdown. He got the receiving touchdown as well. So, you know, he didn't go crazy. He didn't have huge volume, but he definitely picked up. J.K. Dobbins is, definitely the, more of a feature back. Justice Hill ran well again, 8 for 45. Clearly the number two. No more Mike Davis. No more of Kenyon Drake. Drake didn't even touch the ball. I don't even know. He might have even been a scratch for all I know. I didn't get the chance to see that their actives, but basically they're done. Don't worry about them anymore. You can cross their names off, take them off your rankings and all that. On the other hand, on the Bills side of things, I think we got to watch for the injury situations there with Isaiah McKenzie and Jamison Crowder getting banged up in this one. Khalil Shakir could be a really nice pickup this week.
Yeah, the McKenzie one is big. I mean, he's kind of been the ideal third receiver in a really good offense who can return fantasy value. I mean, you think guys like Tyler Boyd, they just become bankable because that offense is so productive and it's so often finding itself in the red zone. But you mentioned Crowder. I mean, he was diagnosed with a broken ankle, so he's going to be out for a while. Likely for the rest of the regular season. He's pretty much out of the picture. Depending on what happens with McKenzie, that creates a situation where everybody. It's kind of getting bumped up. And with McKenzie, it looks like it'll just be concussion protocol this week. So we might not know until later in the week. By the way, while you were doing that last read, we did get a couple pretty big injury notes from me and Rappaport. Treylon Burks going to miss some time with turf toe. And Cordero Patterson headed to IR after getting a knee procedure earlier today. So we knew he was kind of limited this past week, was playing through it. Doesn't sound like he came out of that feeling any better. So the expectation per Rap is that Patterson will be back in 4 weeks, but nonetheless, a pretty big loss.
Yeah, and he came in back into the game in the fourth quarter in that one, too. Yeah. That's the thing that I'm a little surprised by that.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, Tyler Allgeier is definitely – he's available in a lot of leagues, too. A lot of people got – remember, he was a healthy scratch in week one. You know, it was very limited in his work. Now he's been picking it up steadily. Go get him. He's now the top waiver pickup, I think, of the week.
I think so. And, unfortunately, you go into a matchup against Tampa Bay next week, so it's not ideal. And then after that, it's the 49ers, and then it's the Bengals and the Panthers.
Right.
So you don't exactly have this cupcake stretch in the schedule. But nonetheless, I mean, that's a lot of usage for a guy who's looked good the last couple of weeks as well to be picking up. So I think in this case, you kind of have to close your eyes. And even if you don't love the matchups, it's still worth grabbing him.
Yeah, for sure. Treylon Burks got turf toe injury. He could be out a while. There's no immediate pickup in the wake of that, unfortunately.
No. Makes you feel slightly better about Robert Woods, I guess, who is just kind of finding ways to hang around. He got in the end zone again, like you mentioned, but no real change there.
Yeah. One more game from the early slate, Chargers-Texans. I thought the Texans were a sneaky underdog in this one, and they did put together a run late, and then the Chargers swatted him back away and said, okay, that was fun that you made it a three-point game late, but then they got the late touchdown. We saw that Austin Eckler got kind of well, 13 for 60, two touchdowns, and then the receiving touchdown. You finally got the scores from Eckler here. Average yard per carry wasn't great, but they also didn't ask a whole lot of them. Herbert was great in this one. threw for 340. They got well as an offense.
They did, but man, this got really dicey for a while there.
Yeah.
I mean, they were up 21-0 at one point and looked like they were cruising toward the ultimate get right game, like you're saying. And then all of a sudden, midway through the fourth quarter, this is a 3-point game. And I mean, the Chargers needed to convert a fourth down to avoid true disaster here. I mean, they faced a 4th-and-2 from around midfield with about 5.5 minutes left in this game. And that ended up being a really big play to Eckler. Takes a short pass, gets 20 plus yards. And from then on, they basically rolled. But if they don't convert that, I mean, this was going to get extremely, extremely dicey for the Chargers. So the final result looks fine. You know, they covered a big number on the road. You feel good about how they started the game. But man, if you watch this game start to finish, it was not quite as convincing as you would think.
No, it certainly wasn't. They kind of took their foot off the gas. Yeah, kind of like the Arizona Raiders game.
Yeah, very similar. Very, very similar. And yeah, I mean, with the Chargers, man, they have enough talent, and you have a good enough quarterback that you're always going to be in the mix. And they're kind of an impossible team to jump off of, but just bad, weird vibe so far with this team. It feels like every week they're leaving points on the table. The defense never plays quite as good as it should. I'm kind of starting to wonder about Brandon Staley.
I don't know. It's just Charger DNA takes over.
It
I
is.
Swear.
Yeah. It's nothing he can do.
Mike Williams went off 7 for 120. So you like seeing it, didn't score. Joshua Palmer only got one target. What happened there?
Yeah, you would think this would be a great spot for Josh Palmer. We talked about him quite a bit during draft season as like this, you know, potential breakout, especially if Mike Williams or Keenan Allen got hurt. Keenan Allen gets hurt early on in the year. It's kind of the perfect setup for him, and it just hasn't happened. It has not happened whatsoever. And again, that just goes back to what's been kind of this strange Chargers offense. It never really feels like it's running on all cylinders. Although we saw Mike Williams bounce back in a big way. He was extremely quiet last week against the Jags. He goes 7 for 120. Your guy, Gerald Everett, just continues chugging along.
Yeah.
That's super, super productive. I mean, he's tight end 5 right now in PPR leagues, behind only Kelsey, Andrews, Hockenson, and Zach Ertz. I mean, he looks like he's going to have some staying power. But yeah, Josh Palmer, 1 for 25 on one target. Just, yeah, not really playing the role that we expected.
Yeah. Damian Pierce, they just need to give him the ball a little bit more, although he did have 6 catches, but he only had 8 yards from those catches. Got a Damian Pierce question here. Rendon says, should I trade Damian Pierce for James Conner and Melvin Gordon? He just lost Javonte. He's also got Alvin Kamara. No. Damian Pierce is what you're hoping James Conner and Melvin Gordon can be the rest of the year. And I'm not convinced Conner is going to get back to that. And I think Gordon's going to split time with Mike Boone. I don't think it's going to be a full like workhorse guy. Pierce got every single one of the Texans carries. And he has like basically going forward, you know, I know Burkhead is more involved in the passing game, but mm-hmm. Pierce is a legit real deal. I know that touchdown run didn't make anybody miss. It was just like parting of the Red Sea. On that 75-yard touchdown run. But, I mean, he was 13 for, what, 50-something in his other carries. He's a good back. He runs hard. He finishes the run. You know, don't trade away Pierce right now. I wouldn't do it.
No, I mean, especially with – I mean, Melvin Gordon has fumbled, like, 5 times in his last 50 carries. Mm. I mean, that's – they don't have much of a choice at this point. But, I mean, it's – if you watch that game yesterday, too, I mean, he just looks confused. Like, he doesn't – it's like he has the yips kind of in terms of holding onto the ball.
Right.
So that situation is not exactly maybe as pristine as it looks with Javonte Williams going out. And, you know, we'll see. It's not like it's just going to be the Melvin Gordon show. Like, Boone's going to be involved. Maybe they go and bring some outside help to spruce up that backfield. But, yeah, even if you just look at the snap count with Damian Pierce, like, ideally you'd love him to be a little more involved in passing downs. It was still 11-1 in terms of third down snaps in favor of Rex Burkhead, but that was basically the only time Burkhead was even on the field. I mean, 34-2 was the snap split in favor of Pierce on first and second down. So, I mean, he is the guy at this point. He got all 5 short yardage carries in this game. I think the needle's definitely pointing up for Pierce. I mean, the question is, you know, how many weeks are the Texans, you know, going to be able to put up 24 points? They're not often going to be storming back like they did in this game. But nonetheless, I think, you know, that early season kind of panic where it's like, are they really going to do this with Rex Burkhead? That's starting to wear off.
I think storming back is what they do. That's because they fall behind. They got that part down.
Yeah, they're very good at falling behind.
Yeah. 0-3-1. They did storm back against the Colts. No, it was the other way around. I take that back. It was the other way around. They had a big lead against the Colts. They allowed them to storm back to a tie. Davis Mills threw two picks. He got sacked four times. I'm just like, they didn't lose their fumbles at least, so they had that going for them. But and then they got that recovery on the kickoff fumble to make it a little closer. That was actually the fact that they couldn't score a touchdown off that, turn that around, was maybe a disappointment there. I was more bullish on Mills. I'm less impressed now than I was. I mean, he had a fine fantasy day, but I just don't think he's that good of a real life quarterback.
No, I feel like he's taking a step back this season. I was really impressed. I mean, there was a case to be made last year that he outplayed Trevor Lawrence, and he kind of looks like he's plateaued, or like I said, is kind of taking a slight step back. Just the accuracy hasn't been there. I had the pleasure of watching that full Texans Bears game last week, and he was rough. He was really rough in that game. Obviously had that late pick to Roquan Smith, two more interceptions in this game. For a while there, it looked like they had maybe struck gold, last season with this kind of mid-round quarterback. But I think to me, he looks like he has the look of kind of a long-term borderline starter at best.
It's poor man's Ryan Fitzpatrick. Sorry.
I mean, a longer neck, but yes.
Yeah. Shorter beard.
Yeah.
All right. Before we move on to the afternoon games, note from our friends at Monkey Knife Fight. Football is officially back on Monkey Knife Fight with all the NFL action you're looking for. And if college football is more your speed, they've got plenty of that too. On Monkey Knife Fight, there's no sharks, no salary caps, and no math. It's just easy to play, easy to win, daily fantasy player props. Join now at monkeyknifefight.com and you'll get your first game free. Then use promo code RWNFL to get your first deposit matched instantly up to $100. So what are you waiting for? Join Monkey Knife Fight today. All right. Unfortunately, we got to start the afternoon slate with Arizona, Carolina, which lived down to expectations. Has Matt Rhule been fired yet?
Matt Rhule has not been fired yet.
Come on, Ian Rappaport. Let us know this.
I did see a tweet regarding the Panthers this morning where Matt Rhule confirmed that he will be sticking with Baker Mayfield as the team's quarterback. When the other option is Sam Darnold, I guess that becomes a little bit more of an understandable decision. But man, this Carolina team is rough. The Bears are almost in their own category where, like, I kind of like watching them because it's like, it's so bad that it's kind of an assault to the eyes in like a fun way. Carolina is just like purely the most unwatchable team in the league. Like there's like a certain sadness to the Panthers offense that, at least with the Bears, like anything is on the table. You don't know what's going to happen. Carolina, it's like every time you turn around, it's like Baker Mayfield's dropping back. It's 3rd and 5. He's got an open receiver, and he throws it directly into the arms of a defender who knocks it down to the ground. It felt like that happened 10 times yesterday.
He had like five passes tipped at the line of scrimmage.
Horrible. I mean, he's not even trying to get it over. Like, it's like J.J. Watt is standing right in front of him with his arms up, and he's just like trying to throw right through him. I mean, it's ugly, man. And, I don't think Arizona's a good team either, but they're fortunate in this one. I mean, I think we saw another defensive touchdown for Carolina. Second week in a row they've gotten one of those. Didn't really matter.
Yeah, I mean, Arizona was in the woods in the first half. They were terrible. Horrible first half. It was 10-3 at halftime. I think I tweeted that they were living down to expectation or something of that nature.
Yep.
It's just Arizona kind of found their way in the second half, but not really. I mean, you look at the offensive stats for Arizona. I mean, Kyler 207 passing yards. He did get the rushing touchdown that salvages his fantasy day. But I mean, they were dealing with short fields a lot too. So, I mean, they scored after that. Kudos to them for that, but it was an ugly game all around. I don't think you should be sending the all clear here just because they rallied to beat Carolina. But yeah, I just think that this is two teams with problems. I think James Conner is problematic, and I was big on him. I actually had a few shares of him. Like James Conner over like Josh Jacobs, that's not working out very well right now.
No, I mean, the Jacobs thing, we can't be kicking ourselves for that. I mean, the Raiders were sending all the messaging our way that Josh Jacobs was not the guy, but of course he looked good yesterday. Mm-hmm. I mean, another guy I feel bad that I feel like I was just completely off of him this year is Marquise Brown, who very quietly is the wide receiver 6 right now in PPR leagues, behind only Diggs, Hill, Jefferson, Kupp, and Waddle. So it doesn't really feel like he's had a big year. It feels like a lot of it has kind of come in garbage time, but over the course of 4 games, he's been an accumulator.
Yeah, 11 targets. Once Hopkins comes back, we'll see what happens a little bit there. They're down a bunch of targets. Dortch played, but he was hurt coming into the game. AJ Green did not play. Rondale Moore made his debut, and yeah, it wasn't really that exciting.
Nope.
Ertz is good. Ertz has been fine, and you know, he's actually living up to kind of the expectation that he'd step in. And tight end's a wasteland right now. If you have Zach Ertz, you're feeling pretty good because at least you're getting a floor of some sort of production every sort of week.
Yeah, I mean, you're getting a top five tight end in the league, so I think you feel great about it. We saw a little bit more of a traditional Christian McCaffrey game here. Only 8 carries for 27, but 9 for 81 and a touchdown through the air. So you love to see that, of course, in PPR leagues. He's now up to RB5, just a couple percentage points ahead of Jamal Williams for that designation. And I actually saw a great note earlier this morning on Twitter from Ryan McDowell, who's a Dynasty writer. He notes that Saquon Barkley, who's the RB1 right now, and we're talking PPR, he has 86 fantasy points through 4 games. That is the lowest in any season for the RB1 at this point in the year since 1997.
Wow.
To kind of give you some context for just how shaky even the best players in fantasy have been so far.
Yeah, scoring is down across the league. We talked about that earlier, and running back scoring's way down. And I saw a lot of talk this week. Okay, how many running backs are going in the first round next year? Little as 3, people are suggesting.
Yeah, right. And who knows? I mean, by the end of the year, you know, maybe one of those guys gets hurt, or we feel differently about their situation. I think that's far from a guarantee. We did see a slight uptick in scoring this week. I know through the first 3 weeks, there were 23 games that finished with a combined score of 40 or lower. And I believe we only had 2 or 3 of those this week. So we're moving in the right direction, at least. I know Bears-Giants kind of set us back a little bit. And I think the other one was Commanders-Cowboys finished at 35. But every other game, we at least got to 40 points.
Yeah, and in the case of Seattle-Detroit, both teams got to 40 points themselves. Yeah. That helps the overall scoring quite a bit. So, so it's creeping up. So a little bit there. DJ Moore, light a candle for DJ Moore. He actually had 11 targets this week, but quality of targets, just not great.
Yeah. I don't know if the scorekeeper is, you know, just assigning him targets where every time Baker Mayfield throws it into a defender's, elbow that just say, like, he was probably looking for DJ Moore. I don't know, but 6 for 50. I mean, the way that this Carolina offense is operating, like getting 6 catches and 50 yards out of DJ Moore feels like close to a best case.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Aaron Rodgers said that it's unsustainable to play like they did against the Pats and still hope to win, especially that first half. Lowest, like, one half QB rating of his career, had the pick six at the end of the half where he said that it was almost a little, his throw was so bad that he almost lucked out, that the defender overran the ball. I mean, it was such a bad throw. But then in the second half, they got it on target a little bit more. If Romeo Dubs completes a catch in the end zone, we're not even talking about the overtime of that there. We're talking about what a huge game Romeo Dubs had. Instead, he doesn't. And they wasted a challenge and thus a timeout on that play, too. They could have won in regulation. But, you know, the daisy chains of events that happen after that, you know, aren't necessarily going to be the same. But the fact is, they had to struggle, win in overtime against a team starting their playing their third string QB.
Yeah, I mean, Hoyer went out like second series of the game, so it was basically New England starting Bailey Zappe, and I think Zappe ended up throwing a touchdown on what looked like yet another not quite broken coverage, but just like a miscommunication for the Green Bay defense that has a ton of talent, but has just been suffering from those. It looked very similar to a lot of the plays in Week 1. Against Minnesota, where it's like, okay, the best receiver in the league is running across the middle of the field, and you got linebackers pointing at him and guys looking around. Nobody's actually covering that guy. And that's essentially what happened on the Devontae Parker touchdown that really, for a while there, put this game in pretty major jeopardy. I feel like a fool for making the Packers. I think I made them my best bet in staff picks. And I know it was a big line, but I thought they could at least, you know, show up to the point that this would be like a 24-14 type of game. But that was not the case. I mean, the defense was okay. Had some big sacks. You know, Rashawn Gary, by the way, is second in defensive player of the year odds right now. He's been fantastic in the early going. But no Jaire Alexander. I think they felt that in this game. And it was a classic letdown scenario. It's like, you know, the other team has a below average quarterback. You know, it's like, if we just play our B game, we're going to win. And you kind of felt that from the Packers. You know, you had there's an early fumble by Romeo Dubs. Every game that turns out like this has a couple of those pivot plays. that was one of them. The Rodgers pick six. I mean, that was as bad of a throw as you'll ever see from Aaron Rodgers. And almost every time he throws a pick, you can make an excuse. You know, you'll see him, you know, kind of throw the chin strap and look at a receiver and say, I thought you were doing this. Like, there was no excuse for that one. That was just a really, really bad force by Rodgers. And it put the Packers in a bad spot. And I think they felt like they had to get away from the run a lot of this game in the second half, especially. And yeah, man, I mean, I still think the Packers 3 weeks from now are going to be 6-1 and we're going to feel okay about them. But this was a very, very narrow miss in what would have been one of the worst losses of Rodgers' career.
Rodgers even blamed himself for Dubs' fumble because it wasn't like a perfectly, you know, it was kind of away and he had to pull it back in. And he's like, we were, you know, it's almost too bad that he made the catch. You know, it's like one of those sort of plays because he couldn't protect the ball. Yeah. Running game was great in this one here. Jones, 16 for 110. Dillon, 17 for 73. Watson had the end-around touchdown. That was a great block by Dubs to help set them free on that one there. So at first, all I saw was Watson scoring. And like, oh, he's redeeming himself. And he did. He scored, but it wasn't on a pass. But Lazard looked good. 6 for 116, 8 targets on this one here. Really, you know, the ankle doesn't seem to be a problem anymore for him.
No, Lazard looked amazing. He's clearly, I mean, I think Romeo Dobbs is kind of starting to encroach on his territory a little bit, but I think it's still Lazard as the number one target in this receiving core. And then a nice touchdown from Robert Tonyan as well, who has been, you know, a little quiet through these first couple of weeks, but started to look a little bit more like his old self. But man, this was, if you watch this game, it was shaky for the Packers. I mean, it was, you know, couple big throws to like Randall Cobb coming through on third and longs, you know, players like that who you probably don't really want to be depending on the Rodgers to Cobb connection in those situations. But ultimately in the NFL, a win's a win, right? I mean, the Chiefs had a similar game last week against the Colts. They weren't able to pull it out. So at the end of the day, you know, we'll see where the season goes for Green Bay. But even if you feel bad about it, at least you're not taking the loss.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. On the Pat side of things, Harris and Stephenson, almost perfect split in carries. It's like, I think it was like 51 to 49%. They face Detroit next week. It's the Matt Patricia revenge game. I know that's the way it should be billed, at least. Might not be. But both Harris and Stephenson are really good starts next week. Just if you're playing DFS, you have to kind of decide between the two of them. But it's kind of that way in draft season all along. In some leagues, Stephenson went first. Some leagues, Harris went first. Harris got the score this week. Stephenson got the catches at least. So, you know, he was fine if you started him. You were just hoping he'd get in the end zone.
Yeah. I mean, kind of a similar situation to what we saw on the other side, you know, with Jones and Dillon, both guys really productive in this game. You know, Harris and Stephenson, I thought, especially given the lack of talent and experience at the quarterback position for New England, I was surprised how effectively they were able to run the ball. I mean, that's really what kept them in this game. In the second half was just being able to consistently convert, you know, third and shorts.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Last of the afternoon games, Broncos, Raiders. You heard the news already, but if you joined us late, Javonte Williams, torn ACL, out for the season. Devastating loss. Melvin Gordon committed a fumble six. He was three, you know, like carried three times for 8 yards. Mike Boone supplanted him a little bit. Denver, I mean, despite all of that, they had their chances. They just kind of gacked this game away. And I mean, credit to the Raiders, they took it. But and Josh Jacobs in particular took it. But this was definitely the Josh Jacobs game. How big are you going to be on Mike Boone this week?
Well, I mean, Mike Boone himself has had some kind of ball control issues as well. Yep. I mean, I think Melvin Gordon is the guy. Obviously, he's going to be rostered in most leagues. It's going to be his job, I think, to lose. But like we were saying earlier in the show, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be 100% Melvin Gordon. And, you know, if he comes out and has like a fumble in the first quarter next week, I think things could get really interesting because there's not many coaches or teams out there that have tolerance for guys who put the ball on the ground. And his fumble in this game could not have been costlier. I mean, fumbled it, returned all the way for a touchdown. And that really felt like the true turning point in a game that all along, it's like you knew this was a must win for the Raiders and you kind of figured they were going to find a way to do it. But that gave them a huge advantage. Although Denver, you know, was able to come back and score on that next possession. I think both teams actually missed extra points. You know, for the Raiders, or go ahead.
It's just weird to see it because, you know, Carlson hasn't missed a field goal attempt in that stadium yet. And McManus is pretty solid too.
Yeah, right. Very, very weird back-to-back. I mean, this was a strange game for sure in its entirety. But, yeah, I mean, taking Javonte Williams out of this offense for Denver, huge. huge, because that was through the first 3 weeks of the year, at least. Like, they did finally get Russell Wilson going in this game. He gets up to 237 yards, albeit only on 17 completions. But Javonte Williams was kind of the best thing they had going, and it felt like they were getting away from him more than they needed to. You take this away from this Denver offense, and I mean, we've talked about Denver is very lucky to not be sitting at 1-3 right now, and now you lose probably your most dependable offensive weapon. It's going to get a little dicey.
Yeah, I mean, they barely beat Houston. They barely beat the Niners.
Right.
Of course, they could have beaten Seattle. They should have beaten Seattle. So that one's going to, and they're going to look back on and say, oh, what were, how do we give that one away? I think it really is time to let Russ cook. The problem is they're having a hard time protecting him. He took three sacks, and he was under pressure a lot of other times too. So that's something to watch for there, is like, because really, I mean, unless they pick somebody up off the street, it's really two problematic backs in Gordon and Boone. Yep. Boone had a really bad drop on fourth down. Yep. Now, granted, they're already down 9 points, but it was one of those where like, oh, that just can't drop that. I mean, it was an easy first down on fourth and five.
Yep.
Just completely dropped it. So that was bad. But I think you're going to see a lot more. You know, I would be interested in trading for Judy and Sutton right now. Two guys that really haven't lit it up yet, both scored this past week. I think they're going to really get a lot of targets going forward. I think they have to. I think that's the way they have to kind of lean after all of this.
Yeah, I think we could see a complete reversal, and this team just kind of becomes a more high-octane passing offense going forward. I don't think they're going to be able to depend on the running game really whatsoever, and they didn't move the ball well on the ground in this game even before Javonte Williams got hurt. I mean, 10 for 28. Russell Wilson was their most effective rusher in this game. Did have a rushing touchdown. Should have probably been a passing touchdown. He hit a really nice throw to K.J. Hamler, who stumbled at like the 2-yard line and wasn't able to get in. But yeah, this was easily Russell Wilson's best game of the year. It's really not even close.
Yeah, and albeit in a losing effort, unfortunately for them. Davante Adams, 9 for 101. Matt Collins, 3 for 33. So a big come down after last week's performance against Tennessee. No surprise there. I mean, obviously there. Are you concerned about Darren Waller? Only 3 for 24, only 5 targets in this one.
A little bit. I mean, this is the second week in a row now that target share has not really been there. Trying to look at his snap count in this game. I mean, I know last week it was really low. This week, higher. You know, I played 60 out of 75 snaps. I think you're fine with that. It's not like there's really any competition for him at the tight end spot, nor should there be. But, you know, this is also without Hunter Renfrow, who missed another game with that concussion. Didn't see a whole lot out of Matt Collins. Played a bunch of snaps, ran a bunch of routes, only had 3 catches. But, yeah, with Waller, it's like, you know, if you're having these games without Hunter Renfrow, you're not going to feel better when Renfrow's back in the lineup, and that'll presumably be in week 5.
That's true. Let's finish with the Sunday night game. Gooden started worse for the Bucs. They fumble the opening kickoff. The Chiefs turn around score right away. The Bucs ran the ball 6 times. 6 in this game. Very odd mix of play call mix there. Yep. Brady threw for 52 times, 385, the 3 touchdowns. One of the big plays, though, was the fumble sack right after, you know, which really put, you know, right after they had stopped the Chiefs on fourth down. And you're like, okay, time to build some momentum. Nope. Boom. Done. Once the Chiefs went up, like, 28-10? I mean, it was just all comeback time for them the rest of the way.
Yeah, well, you mentioned that fumble by Brady. I mean, that one felt like, okay, they had a little bit of momentum. They had gone down. They got the touchdown to Mike Evans. And then they had forced the fourth down miscue by Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who not only would have picked up the first down, but it looked like he had quite a bit of room to run. So that to me was a huge inflection point in this game. You're like, okay, if we're Tampa Bay, we didn't play this fourth down that well, but we got the stop. If we go down and we score here, all right, all of a sudden it could be 21-17 and we're feeling okay. And then first play of the drive for Tampa Bay, fumble by Brady. Tampa or KC set up, you know, basically at the 30-yard line, and the game was essentially over after that. So it really felt like it could have gone a different way. But you know, you start the game by fumbling the opening kick, you fumble again deep in KC territory. That's just how it's going to go, you know. And the Tampa Bay defense looked awful, I thought, in this game. Maybe it was better just scheming by the Chiefs, better plays by Patrick Mahomes, who was locked in really from the first series. But this was not the same defense that we saw the first 3 weeks of the year. I mean, KC. Very easily could have scored 5 touchdowns on its first 5 possessions had it not been for that drop by Edwards-Helaire. But especially in the first half, they were just moving the ball at will.
Yeah, and usually I think of Edwards-Helaire as a pretty good pass catcher. I think he lost in the lights a little bit there. The way he reacted to that ball, he didn't pick it up right.
Angle.
He kind of boxed it instead of like tried to catch it. But
exactly.
So I don't even think there's anything to read off of that. I mean, Pacheco looked good when he ran the ball. Looked shot out of a cannon there. He could be earning some more playing time, although I still don't know if he's involved in the passing game at all. McKinnon, you know, he gets a lot of snaps. He got that target in the red zone, got some carries in the red zone, and did nothing with it at all. Sky Moore, okay, he got targets finally. So, yeah, he exists. He lives. But it's really, you know, the guy that I'm just totally bummed out about is I have Juju in some places, and I'm still waiting for that first really big game. He hasn't had it yet.
Yeah, I mean, you like that. Like, the targets have consistently been there. You know, it feels like he's kind of on the cusp of doing it. And, you know, in this game, it's always going to be Kelce ahead of him in the pecking order. And that was certainly the case. I mean, Kelce had like six catches in the first quarter of this mm-hmm. game. But Juju, to me, is still the guy I like the most in that receiving core by a lot. But it just hasn't quite happened where he's been able to operate as anything close to a true number one. It's almost like he's a number two. They don't really have a number one. And then guys like MBS and Sky Moore and Hardman are more like the third and fourth guys. But yeah, it's been disappointing. I was all in on Juju, and you know, he's still been startable. He's been a very low end starter. He's not giving you zeros every week, but it's been a lot of like, you know, 8 fantasy points, 9 fantasy points, 12 fantasy points. Not exactly what we're looking for.
Yeah. Agreed. On the Bucs side, I mean, Evans is Evans. He did his thing. He got hit hard a couple times, including that first touchdown catch. Two plays on that drive where he got drilled, but, you know, came back up. We saw Chris Godwin return, 7 for 59, 10 targets. He was very active in the passing game. Yep. Julio was barely active.
Yeah, they took one deep shot to Julio, you know, didn't complete that, and that was about it. You know, it with him, it's so hard because he felt like he was one of the only good things they had going in week one against Dallas. And then of course he misses two more games and mm-hmm. we're back in the same situation that it feels like we're always in with him. I don't know. I mean, when Evans and Godwin are both healthy, can you really justify starting Julio?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I mean, there's still going to be weeks.
Or Gage.
Right. Gage. I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. I think I love the idea of Julio. I love what he can bring to this offense. I think there will be 3 or 4 games the rest of the way where he is a big factor. But I also think the weeks where he's not putting up those games, it could look a lot like this, where it's 1 for 7. And if you did slot him in there as your third receiver, you threw him in as a flex, you're basically taking a zero.
Yeah, I think that's right. Tampa Bay gets a home game against the Falcons. Turns out that might be actually kind of a big game coming up here.
Yeah.
Tampa 0-2 at home, which is kind of weird, but they need this one here. Because their schedule is going to be tough later on. So this is one they got to have. Chiefs, home game against the Raiders coming up. That could be a big-time shootout. I'm looking forward to seeing that one. That's the Monday night game too.
Yeah. Raiders have found ways to play the Chiefs well these last couple of years. I wouldn't say, you know, with the Raiders winning this past week, it's not a complete must-win, but also not exactly the team that you want to see on the schedule if you're Las Vegas, especially with as great as Kansas City's offense looked in this game. I mean, this was just such a quintessential get right game for Kansas City. I mean, they had the, like, the trick play at the goal line where Mahomes is like fake barking over to the sideline. And all of a sudden a tight end just kind of scoots his way in there, takes a snap for an easy touchdown. Like, they were, they were operating with a level of confidence that we haven't seen since week one.
Yeah. They just, when they're rolling, they look different than every other team in football. I mean, they just so many different ways they can beat you. Any other takeaways from this week before we sign off?
No, I remain optimistic about the Jags.
All right.
It's a loss. It's a loss that they were probably supposed to take. I get it. But I still think they're the best team in the AFC South. Tell you what, I'm fired up for tonight, too. 49ers Rams at San Francisco. No idea how that game is going to play out whatsoever. I'm slightly leaning toward the Rams, but it should be a fun watch. And, you know, we'll get to comment on that one live on XM tonight.
Yeah. Back-to-back primetime games for the Bengals, too. They had the Thursday night game last week. Now they go to Baltimore for the Sunday night game.
That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, they finally play a real QB. The QBs that the Bengals have faced so far, Mitch Trubisky, Cooper Rush, Joe Flacco and his 50-plus targets or attempts, and then the combination of Tua and Teddy Bridgewater. So it's a step up in class for them, obviously. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. And all their like Sunday night games, they're always on the road against the divisional team. So I've carped about that before, but I am really looking forward to that game. That should be a fun game. Although I think Baltimore's going to win. We'll see. But we'll find out. Looking forward to it. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I want to thank everyone for listening to this podcast. And I want to thank our new sponsor, No House Advantage. Appreciate them for coming on board. We got Jake and Joe with free agents tomorrow. Thanks for listening to this podcast. Take care.